Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Erica White, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international destination and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the gastronomic and economic virtues of a location. But this week, we are taking a step back from geography and a step towards health, particularly the relationship between food and health. These days, we live in a world where every sensation is a symptom and the pharmaceutical solution is never far out of reach. But this wasn't always the case. Prior to the advent of modern chemistry, medicine had more primitive origins, plants and herbs mostly, that were administered through tonics, teas, creams, rudimentary capsules, or diet. Some traditions are more clinical in approach. Acupuncture from the tradition of Chinese medicine is a great example. Another great example is Ayurveda, and this is what we'll be spending most of today's show talking about. To help me explore the tradition of Ayurveda, I am joined by Allison Kramer, a.k.a. Ayurveda Ali, creative director and director of the Ayurveda program at Laughing Lotus Yoga Studio in New York City and soon to be Brooklyn. So hi, Ali. Welcome to Heritage.
Hi, Brianna. Welcome. Welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, let's just start from the top.
Yep.
Right out of the bat, what is Ayurveda?
Ayurveda is a very ancient system of holistic living. It's approximately 4,000 to 5,000 years old. It began in India, and it's something that I discovered in yoga school and has become a passion of mine because I think it's something that really applies to our modern everyday lives in a really beautiful way, not just incorporating what we eat, what we drink, but also our exercise, our sleep habits, our work habits, even the relationships that we have with the people around us. It really encompasses a whole lifestyle.
Excellent. And how did you personally, you said you became interested in it through yoga school,
mm-hmm.
but what, tell me a little bit more about what that entailed as far as you becoming now a teacher of Ayurveda.
Well, when I was doing my yoga teacher training at Laughing Lotus, we had an Ayurveda teacher by the name of Sarah Tomlinson, beautiful teacher, come in, and she did one day of Ayurveda with us. And I think we all have these different lenses that we can look through for our world to sort of make sense. And Ayurveda, the lens of Ayurveda, when it was held up to me, everything sort of fell into place. Because so much of it is about common sense and giving ourselves permission to do the things that we know will make us feel good, that will improve our quality of life.
And let's talk a little bit more about the history of Ayurveda. Where, you said 4,000 years old, from India.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain how that made it its way to New York City
modern
day?
Yeah. So Ayurveda began down south in India, in Kerala, which is a really beautiful, warm, lush, tropical environment. But India is such a tremendous place, and there's so many different climates and different terrains. And so Ayurveda developed as something that really addressed the individual person. There are some general guidelines, but it treats each individual person's needs in a very specific way. So how did it come to America? I think the interest in yoga eventually sort of brought the Ayurveda in, because Ayurveda is called the sister science to yoga. And these days it seems like there's a yoga studio on every single block. And there are people who are interested in a cleaner way of living and a more sustainable way of living and local and organic and all of that. And Ayurveda is all about that.
And you touched on it, but what are some of those basic principles of Ayurveda? And specifically, I'd love to touch on the elements of balance and food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Ayurveda is based, the whole system is really based on the five elements: earth, water, fire, air, and space. And really, it's everything that is manifest, everything that is tangible, is one or more combinations of those elements. So creating balance is all about bringing in the other elements so that we create a complete picture. In other words, today it's cold and it's raining and it's November and we're in New York City on the East Coast. So I wouldn't wake up this morning and think to myself, oh, I can't wait to have a big raw salad for breakfast. You know, you wake up on a cold, rainy day, you want something warming, something that's going to feel solid. So maybe have some oatmeal instead. Have some cinnamon, which is a spice that is both heating and a little bit drying. So if you're feeling like the dampness is getting into your bones, the chill is coming into your bones, you've got something that is balancing that out.
So this is kind of a prelim question to my next question. Ayurveda 4,000 years ago probably looked very different, just as you said, just based on geography alone in southern India versus anywhere else. But does Ayurveda look the same today as it did 4,000 years ago? Like, how closely do you think, or how much has it mutated over time?
Well, I think the basic principles are the same. Okay. And the basic principle is that like increases like, and opposite is going to balance. So really that can apply to sort of any situation. It looks different in that, you know, I am not a 90-year-old Indian man sitting in a cave dispensing herbs. But I can tell my students, okay, here's a couple of herbs that you could get from a good website, from a reputable website, and they will help you. And these are ancient, ancient medicinal herbs that have been tested over time. Another great thing about all of the Ayurvedic herbs is that they don't interfere with any medications that somebody might be on. So a lot of times the Eastern and Western perspective can come together.
And coexist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's a great segue to my next question. I feel like over the past decade, I've noticed that more insurance companies are covering acupuncture. Mm. And then I was on the subway the other day and I took a picture of it. It was an advertisement from a new healthcare company saying they would cover the cost of their Pilates, yoga, and gym memberships. Mm-hmm. And so what does it say about our society that people are gravitating towards these more holistic alternatives, if you will, to Western medicine? And so much so, in fact, that even from a business perspective, insurance companies are covering costs.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it, I mean, you know, from my perspective, it seems like our lives go really, really fast. And we're attached to our phones, we're attached to the internet all day long. And everything is sort of, you know, if you really think about like the cyber world, it's not really real. It's not tangible. It's nothing that we can touch. And life goes really, really fast. So I think to balance that out, there is this movement towards wanting to move a little bit slower, wanting to get back to nature. You know, we live in cities, and I don't think it's an accident that people are planting gardens in Brooklyn. You know, we were just talking about the garden in the back of this restaurant. So I think that it's actually a really beautiful way to bring nature into an urban lifestyle and to bring some slowness and some thoughtfulness and some care into a life that is speedy and busy and stressful, can be very stressful. So we're looking for these ways to combat that and to find balance in our lives.
And now I just want to speak to a point of maybe the difference between the two, between the Western and Eastern. The difference between maybe treating a symptom, whereas an Ayurveda kind of looks at a whole. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it becomes eventually more of a lifestyle.
Exactly. Exactly. And what I always tell, I do private consultations, and what I always tell people is, you know, start to incorporate this stuff slowly. And even the little changes will make a difference. You know, something as small as change your toothpaste. To use a natural toothpaste instead of you know, I don't want to name brands here, but okay. If you read the labels, you know, in the same way that we're all starting to read more labels on our foods and to look for organic produce and all of that kind of stuff. So I think that with Ayurveda, it's going to work perhaps a little bit slower than taking a pill, mm-hmm. you know, than taking a drug, than just popping something, which, you know, a lot of times we want a fast answer. Ayurveda says incorporate the changes slowly but surely to bring us back to balance. So the idea is really that we come from a state of perfect health, and it's the things that we do in our lives that take us away from that.
And could you speak in your experience mm-hmm. with your clients? Is that something that takes them a little time to come around to, the slow roll, or is it they're like, okay, I'm ready, whatever you say?
It really, it's funny that you say that. It really varies on the client mm-hmm. and has a lot to do with their personal constitution. But yes, some people start to do it very slowly. Some people want to go all out. And those people I actually encourage to take it slowly. Because one of my teachers, Robert Svoboda, he always said, if you're stressing about, you know,
being perfect,
exactly, then it's not Ayurveda to begin with, because it creates more stress in your life. But I will say this, I had this one client that I quote all the time, because I check in with people and I say, okay, what are you doing? What's working for you? What's not working for you? And he said, I'm doing everything that you said. And I said, that's amazing. And he said, well, I want to suffer less. So I'm willing to do what it takes to suffer less.
There you go.
Yeah.
You mentioned toothpaste.
Mm-hmm.
Not to completely
no, go for
throw
it.
That under, but what are some other things that people could slowly start to incorporate? Or are there things that people might already be doing, they don't even know it, that are Ayurvedic in its foundation?
Yeah. Okay. So Ayurveda talks a lot about cleansing, which I think is something that is that makes a lot of sense in our urban lifestyles. You know, we do live in New York City, and it's not always breathing the cleanest air or touching the cleanest surfaces or walking through, you know, I live in Hell's Kitchen. I walk through Times Square, and even, you know, the amount of lights and sounds
stimulus.
It's a lot. It really is a lot. So Ayurveda talks a lot about stuff that we can do in the morning. First thing in the morning, I make what I call my Ali tonic, and it's just warm water with some lemon, and I add a big pinch of ginger, a big pinch of cinnamon, and a small pinch of turmeric. And turmeric is antibacterial and antifungal. Cinnamon and ginger are both heating and warming and good for digestion, you know, and that builds up what in Ayurveda we call the Agni, which is your digestive fire. And you really want that to work so that you can digest your food properly, because you can be taking in the most healthy diet in the world, and if you're not digesting it properly, it's not going to be utilized properly. So I think that that's a really lovely way to start my day. And tongue scraper, I use a tongue scraper. And once you start with the tongue scraper, you can't really go back. It changes your life.
I had a little powwow. I mean, it's not maybe the most fun thing to talk about, but right. I had a little powwow with a couple of girls, and we all agree the tongue scraper changed our lives.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's the greatest thing ever.
It's so weird, but it's
I know.
To talk about, but to completely switch to the other side, are there any big Ayurveda no-nos?
Yeah, and I think with the Ayurveda no-nos, it's the same thing that we sort of all know, which is, I mean, first of all, Ayurveda also agrees with the Western nutrition standpoint about food combinations, about certain food combinations, and that they're not great, like dairy and fruit. Mm. So, you know, you go to your local Indian restaurant, and they'll have something like mango lassi, and that's actually not Ayurvedic. Right? Because it's mango and yogurt together. It's fruit and dairy mixed together. So there are certain dietary combinations. And then, you know, things that are common sense. Don't eat a big meal before bedtime. According to Ayurveda, actually, the biggest meal should be lunchtime, because it's the hottest time of day. So reflectively, our digestive fire is the best, you know. And I teach a lot in Europe. And I find it interesting that in Europe, my lunch break when I'm teaching is an hour and a half, you know, and here, half an hour, 20 minutes, 15 minutes at your desk. You know, if I could just say anything to your listeners, it would be close your computer, turn off your phone, sit someplace pleasant, and eat your food.
Yeah. Well, and it's true. It is a cultural thing. You know, I just had Margarita Ronte on from Mexico, and she was going on about comida. Their third meal of the day is definitely the largest, mm-hmm. and I think in Europe as well, in India, I'm assuming as well. So it is a cultural thing to get that hour mm-hmm. and really bring your attention to your food and unplug and drop in. So we are going to take a quick break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll be learning more about Ayurveda with Allison Kramer and talking about some more of its practical uses.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
Hello, this is Mark Ladner from Del Posto, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you are listening to Native on Heritage Radio. I'm talking with Allie Kramer of Laughing Lotus about Ayurveda. So I'm kind of glad that we just played the Heritage Heritage Foods drop, because I just want to ask, are you allowed to eat meat with Ayurveda?
This is a really big question, and one I'm glad that you addressed. Ancient Ayurveda, as I said, began about 4,000 years ago, and meat at that time was a very different thing than meat can be today. Not always. I do think, again, that there is a return to a cleaner lifestyle, which includes organic, grass-fed meat from a reliable source, all of that. It depends on which school you subscribe to. One thing that I always try to be sensitive, though, to in my workshops and dealing with my clients is that I don't like to speak in absolutes about people's food. Just because you never know where somebody's coming from or what their cultural background is or if they might have had issues with food in the past, that kind of thing. So I give general guidelines and I ask people to be present and to listen to themselves and listen to their bodies and what they need. So mostly with Ayurveda, meat is used for certain conditions. Mm-hmm. For instance, if a person becomes anemic, right? Or if a person is recovering from a surgery, for instance, something like that. Some Ayurvedic schools are vegetarian, strictly vegetarian, and say that anything can be healed or anything can be really encouraged by a vegetarian diet. And then there are some Ayurvedic schools that say, well, ancient Ayurveda, they did include meat. So let's talk about how we can use meat in a way that is respectful of the land and consistent with our own beliefs.
Okay. What are some common misconceptions that people hold about Ayurveda? Like, in your opinion, when someone says something that they just always believe to be true.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, no.
Well, I don't think you have to go to India and and live on an ashram and eat nothing but brown rice and chant all day and grow dreadlocks. I don't know. It's actually something that is much more accessible than people might think, you know. And one of the things that I tell my clients, I'm like, oh, you know, it would be great if you are somebody who is concerned about your immunity to take an Ayurvedic compound called Triphala. And Triphala is three different fruits that are powdered and dried, and it has a kind of slightly sour taste. And you can take a half teaspoon of that and put it in some warm water and drink it. And it's getting a huge shot of antioxidants first thing in the morning. And people will say, oh, well, Triphala, like, how do I get that? Where do I get that? I've never heard of it. And I'm like, go to Whole Foods. It's there. You know, go to Fairway. It's there. Go to your local health food store. It's there. Because I do think that it's something that is becoming more and more a part of alternative medicine. Mm-hmm. So it's not, it doesn't have to be such a difficult switch of lifestyle or hard to find ingredients or anything like that. You know, it's actually quite in alignment with sort of the way that we're trying to eat these days and the ingredients or the herbs or the different instruments that are utilized are very easily accessible, I think.
And this is something I've been wondering about. Are there any, is there an opinion out there about major differences in approach to Ayurveda between men and women?
Good question. No, not really. Ayurveda really does look at the individual. I think it's more about lifestyle. I mean, I would say the major difference with men and women in terms of how to deal with the diet, because that's usually the first thing that people want to know about, is just that, you know, facts are facts. Men can probably eat more than women and not show it as much.
So is Ayurveda comprehensive? Like, if I have a kidney thing, is there something I can do with Ayurveda, or even more serious things like asthma or even like cancer?
Absolutely. So each specific issue that might come up is considered an imbalance of a certain element. So for instance, if you are somebody who has like eczema, for instance, a skin condition, right? I had eczema as a child really badly. That would be seen as having too much fire and too much air. So you want to do things that would increase earth and water, and that would help to treat it. So we would do things to actually cool down the system and also to encourage more of like an oil production sort of thing. So it might be something as simple as adding some bitter herbs, which are very cooling, and a little bit more good fats to the diet, for instance, avocado or coconut oil or flaxseed oil, those kinds of things.
And what about, I have to play devil's advocate
for a
second. What would you say to someone who just says, this is all like a bunch of crap, like earth, water, fire, like what are you talking about, you know? Mm. Or even people who say like, okay, acupuncture, that doesn't work, come on.
I usually just say try it. Mm-hmm. And see how you feel, you know, and I find that even the most firm in their beliefs, Western medicine, I'm going to pop a pill and all of this is, you know, not part of my lifestyle. Just get them to try it and see how they feel, you know. Now we're coming around into what in Ayurveda we call Vata season. And Vata season is associated with the elements of air and space. So we want to do things that involve earth and water and fire. Interesting, I find that across so many cultures, especially with food, there are certain commonalities. So right now, to add more earth to a diet, we would want to incorporate something like root vegetables. Well, isn't it interesting that we just passed Halloween and there's pumpkins everywhere? And then we go to Thanksgiving, where sweet potatoes are my favorite part of the meal. So I think that even something as little as that, it might be something that you're already doing. So the non-believers, you might be living Ayurveda a little bit and just not know it.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that seasonality. You said we're entering Vata, and you explained a little bit about that. But can you talk about other times of the year?
Absolutely. So generally, I don't give specific dates anymore. According to the Ayurvedic calendar, there are very specific dates of when the seasons change. But I think it's something that we sort of have to feel out. So we are in Vata season now. We've been in Vata season for about a month and a half, something like that. And that's basically autumn and early winter. And then late winter into spring is what's called kapha season, which is associated with earth and water. So it's cold and it's damp and it's kind of heavy. So we would want to eat foods that are more light and dry. And then we move in late spring and summer into what's called pitta season, which is associated with water and fire. So we would want to eat things that are more cooling and, again, a little bit more light. So, you know, that watermelon, coconut, lime juice that you love in the summer, you don't want to drink that in December. You know, we have to change as the seasons change, as what's around us changes, to be in harmony with our world.
Well, I know we could talk about this all day.
Yes,
so
I would.
We need to let people know where they can find out more in kind of two senses. So, like, what if you're someone who doesn't live in an urban area and really doesn't have any access to Ayurveda? Are there any great books or resources that people can find?
Absolutely. There's a couple of books that I use for the 50-hour program that I direct at Laughing Lotus. One is called Essential Ayurveda by Shubhra Krishan. And then the Ayurvedic Book of Home Remedies by another one of my teachers, Dr. Vasant Lad, who is just my guru. He's amazing. and then there's great websites. Banyan Botanicals has a lot of great information. And they sell a lot of the herbs. And they, what's great about them is they're organic. They grow their herbs in a sustainable way, and they give you an explanation with each thing on what it would be good for and a little bit of background about it. So that's a great website. And there's also a great Ayurvedic cooking website called joyfulbelly.com. Mm-hmm. And then I write a column for breatherepeat.com, an Ayurveda column. And that's simple, accessible, short, easy, fun. I'd like to think it's funny. just little bits of information about Ayurveda and sort of where my head's at and what I'm thinking about.
So besides Breathe Repeat, where can people find out more about you?
Well, they could come and do the 50-hour at Laughing Lotus.
What? Tell me more about that. what does that entail?
The 50-hour program is a real thorough introduction to Ayurveda in terms of the diet, herbs, essential oils, different yoga practices. And that's a great one. But upcoming, I've got this beautiful workshop called the Shakti Salon that I love, 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 love doing. And that is November 15th at Laughing Lotus on 19th Street from 2:30 to 7. And it will be a short lecture about this season and appropriate diet and exercise and lifestyle for this season. And then we're going to get into some of the Ayurvedic treatments, which are so lovely for the hair and the face and the skin and the eyes and all of that, because that's a whole other section of Ayurveda, how to take care of ourselves in a really holistic and natural way. Self-care is a real big one.
Absolutely. And if someone wants to find you online, if they want to tweet you a question or something.
Absolutely. Allie at Laughing Lotus. You could write to me if you have a question. Ayurveda Allie on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and et cetera. I'm pretty easily found,
yes,
I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we are about out of time. Allie, thank you so much for coming by and sharing all of your knowledge and experiences with everyone. Very interesting. I'm going to list the websites in the book that you mentioned and some of your easy-to-do recipes and different things on my website, briannakurtz.com. And that's all for Native this week. Next week, I'm headed, home, really. I'll be taking a look at the South Carolina Lowcountry, to be exact, and talking to the team from Palmetto Bluff about culture and the conservation they're doing there. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.